are escaping a land of smoke and mirrors, obfuscation, and confusion, and into a space of liberty-inducing veracity and reason. In this new land, divergence from the secularist status quo is the zenith of human existence. Welcome to Absolute Truth, Absolutely. Transmission begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Absolute Truth, Absolutely podcast. This is powered by LWIM in Miami, Florida, and this is your host, Gio, the youth pastor of said ministry. Well, we're a few days removed from the Super Bowl. I have to tell you, that was an amazing game, probably one of the better playoff or championship games, rather, that I have seen. For a moment there, it was a bit shaky. Let me tell you something. I'm pretty sure everyone at this point that has seen the game is questioning the final call from scrimmage, or what would turn out to be the final call from scrimmage by the Seahawks. And furthermore, I need to establish that I am not a Seahawks fan by any stretch of the imagination. Neither am I a Patriots fan. But the cockiness, the hubris of the Seahawks has been fastidious to my person for many weeks now, especially after they defeated the Green Bay Packers. And I wanted to see that winning streak come to an end somehow, and the Patriots were able to pull off a great victory, in my opinion. But at the same time, why would you not call on Marshawn Lynch to carry the ball into the end zone? What was it? They had about 40 seconds left. How could they not drive that ball? At least they had maybe three opportunities to try to win the game with three final plays right at, what, near the goal line, the 1-2 yard line? So that play call, in my mind, just makes absolutely no sense. Of course, there is the possibility that the Patriots could have stopped Marshawn Lynch, but they really were not doing such a great job of it earlier in the night. And it was a fascinating game. I'll tell you, it was one of the better games. And also, the only thing that corrupted the entire evening had to have been the Katy Perry display. I mean, if you ever want an idea of what it looks like to do anything but music, look no further than last night's, or rather not last night, that was two nights ago, halftime show. That was absolutely horrendous. It was bad. I know the youngsters are going to say, no, Gio, it was wonderful. Well, it wasn't about the music, was it? It was about the presentation. It was about the show. It was about the spectacle, the moving platform, because it was a video that they were portraying under the platform, so it looked like as if there were certain things happening under the dancers and whatnot. And it was absolute Cirque du Soleil. I don't know what else. As a matter of fact, I think I might be insulting Cirque du Soleil. I might be insulting Cirque du Soleil. I really am. The talentless folks, and so many in our country, give these people a pulpit. I mean, seriously. Katy Perry. Seriously, folks? Seriously. As you can tell, my voice is probably cracked a bit from screaming after seeing the Butler interception, so you'll have to forgive my lack of proper intonation for this programming. But here we are once again to bring you the life-inducing, liberty-inducing commentary directly from the scriptures, of course. And we hope that we are always reverting to the scriptures, to Jesus, in order to be our lamppost, our guide into all the truth. Jesus says that if we know the truth will set us free. And that's what we intend to do on this programming, Absolute Truth, Absolutely. Anyways, past football, and now we're headed into the truth-telling waters. I was able to encounter a particular research, or rather a condensation of a research, and there was a report on the Christian Post about a sociologist or a pair of sociologists that have revealed results of their Christianophobia research. And they also provide what this report calls a cautionary warning for conservative Bible believers. Let me preface the following by stating that I have always denounced the use of homophobia and Islamophobia. Number one, these are terms that are employed by the repressors, the suppressors among us, whom don't want an open discourse because they know that if there is such, they, or the public rather, would come into contact with the truth. And that's why they seek to repress the truth, as the Bible says, in unrighteousness. So they have employed terms such as homophobia and Islamophobia in order to denote, categorize, classify certain classes of individuals so that the populace at large may discount these personages' arguments, even though they're based on fact. But notice how they antagonize them, vilify them by calling them names. Ladies and gentlemen, and this is the second point, if you have to revert to name-calling, which is such an infantile, juvenile undertaking, then you have absolutely no argument to make. And your movement, the particular institution that you're trying to promote in society is a farce, and it's absolute deception. Because if you have to revert to name-calling instead of tackling that particular argument face on by counter-arguing with a solid argument, no, that's not what they do. They revert to name-calling. Anyone that has a proper, solid argument to make against another person's point, obviously they are seeking to bring about substantive discussion. Yet, if there's only one party doing this and the other demonizes the other when they are called to give an account for what the denouncing party is proclaiming, then you know that those that are screaming on the rooftops of being treated unfairly and discriminated against, and that persons, the rest of the world is against them, you know that they are advocating for something that is deleterious to society. And that is the case with the Muslims that want Sharia law in the United States, and they want the expansion of Sharia law throughout the world, and then the militant homosexuals whom would try to, by any means necessary, to remove the church from the moral equation. And today's church is more than willing to compromise on the gospel. They are more than willing to compromise on the gospel. This is why you hear, for example, and I'll comment on this in a future episode, this pastor from Hillsong, New York City, and the band, we have to pray about homosexuality because we don't know where to stand on this situation. No, you should know where to stand on it. The problem is you're capitulating. The Bible has said a long time ago. I mean, as a matter of fact, God said it from the very beginning, and Jesus makes reference to this when he says, in the beginning, God made them man and woman. That's it. That is God's plan. That is God's design. Anything outside of that is an aberration. Anything that diverts itself from that scheme is no longer valid. As a matter of fact, the Bible denotes this as sin, disobedience to God's particular plan, to his institution. So, having spoken my piece on Islamophobia and homophobia, it's curious that these two sociologists are coining the term Christianophobia in order to speak about a select group of persons whom have undertaken to disseminate hatred of Christians. See, there's two different things here. When we speak about Islam, we're not hating Muslims. True Christians don't hate Muslims. We don't hate homosexuals either. We simply speak out, as the Bible commands us to do, about the false religion that Islam is, and about the aberrant sexual immorality that homosexuality is. But it doesn't mean we hate these people. And again, hate has been redefined in our day and age. It carries with it today a very sentimentalist definition. Just because I don't agree with you, all of a sudden today, it means you hate me. No, I can disagree with you and still love you. It doesn't mean I hate you. But there we have it. When these groups say hate, what they're, in essence, the truth of what they are stating is the following. If you agree with me by force, which I'm forcing upon you, then you love me. But don't tell me I'm wrong. Otherwise, you're hateful. Because I don't want to hear that I'm wrong. Even though I know in my innermost man that what I'm doing is pernicious. That's what it means. Anyways, let me read further from this report because I think this is curious. Actually, you know what? Before I continue, let me say this. I think this is of absolute importance. I think it's necessary for us to fight fire with fire. I've said it on so many occasions. We need to fight fire with fire. And these sociologists, I don't know what their religious inclination is, but employing the term or coining it, Christianophobia, and I've said it before on the Red Letters Dialogues. I've said it before on this podcast. I've said it from the pulpit on many occasions. Maybe we should coin the phrase Christianophobia. This is a war. You have to engage. It doesn't mean that we're going to employ deceptive tactics as many of these evil individuals are undertaking. But you have to employ the same tactics that they use against you. You have to use them against them in order to showcase the fallaciousness of their arguments and what they're attempting to state in the public square. Because let me tell you something, what they are doing is, the people who are promoting this idea of Islamophobia, that Christians are homophobes, that is slander. But all of a sudden in our society, a Christian has to simply abdicate his or her rights and can't defend themselves. What? That's curious. That's ironic. I didn't know that becoming a believer made me pusillanimistic. All of a sudden becoming a Christian, becoming a believer makes me a pusillanimic individual. Really? This is not what I signed up for. As a matter of fact, as I said beforehand, and I've stated elsewhere, cowards are not allowed into heaven. You take these people straight on, but not like the church is doing and they're calling that love. No, that is cowardice. When you compromise the words of Jesus Christ, that's cowardice. Anyways, let me read a little bit from this report. Sociologists at the University of North Texas are issuing a cautionary warning to Christians, noting that though there isn't widespread Christianophobia in the U.S., the small group of those who have a strong aversion to conservative believers are among the influential and elite. That comes as no surprise. George Yancey and David Williamson shared findings corroborating this notion in their recently released book, So Many Christians, So Few Lions, Is There Christianophobia in the United States?, which promises to offer a, quote, provocative look at anti-Christian sentiments in America, end quote. I promise you I'm going to read this work, and I will provide commentary in future episodes. The sociologists who define Christianophobia as unreasonable hatred or fear of Christians argue that it's worth exploring potential intense bias against Christians as it helps readers understand the social dynamics that exist in the U.S. according to an official book description. As far as how prevalent the problem truly is, Yancey told the Christian Post that it's really a small group of people that holds strong hostility, though the group is comprised of elite individuals with more societal power than the average person. Yancey said that he and his co-author were motivated to explore potential Christianophobia after they began collecting qualitative data from interviews with liberal activists and noticed a troubling trend among a certain subset of these respondents. Let me state that I have never and I will never ever use the term liberal to describe people who are leftists or who look to infringe on another person's rights. This is another redefinition that I cannot live with. Ladies and gentlemen, I would dare say that many people, if they were to categorize me, even though I hate tags, I am a conservative because I am looking to conserve, preserve the very institutions that have allowed us to exist and continue to propagate ourselves as humankind. And the great majority, the very reason we are here today is because of Christendom. Yes, there have been mistakes made in the past by many people who have claimed that they are Christians or representatives of Christ, such as the Catholic Church and the Crusades, which, by the way, they mix us Christians in with, and we had nothing to do with that. But guess what? Love your neighbor. Love the Lord your God with all your mind, soul, strength, and spirit. Love your neighbor as you do yourself. Do as unto others, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That's all part of the Christian ethic, ladies and gentlemen. That's indefeasible. That cannot be argued. That is what I would call an absolute truth. And that is what I would call something that cannot be overturned, an argument that hasn't, you have no way of overturning that argument. What did the founders of this country call it? A self-evident truth. Why is it self-evident? Because God wrote his laws in our hearts, in our minds. We know what many of these truths are. The problem is many persons choose not to acknowledge it, to their own detriment, of course. Curious. So Yancey said that he and his co-author were motivated to explore potential Christianophobia after they began collecting qualitative data from interviews with leftists, I'm going to call them, and noticed a troubling trend among a certain subset of these respondents. That in mind, a few months ago, the sociologist shared a sampling of some of the unreasonable hatred he said he encountered through interviews with cultural progressive activists for the purpose of his study. Here are just a few of the comments that were made about the Christian right. Quote, "I want them all to die in a fire," end quote. What a filial sentiment, isn't that? Very affable individual. This comes to us from a male aged between 26 and 35, and this person has a doctorate. Guess higher education did not expurgate animosity in this person's heart. Another individual said, quote, "They should be eradicated without hesitation or remorse. Their only purpose is to damage and inflict their fundamentalist virus into everyone they come in contact with," end quote. So we are akin to bacteria. Wonderful. This was a female aged 66 to 75, and this person has a master's degree. Lovely. I absolutely love what higher education is inculcating in the students. Quote, "They make me a believer in eugenics. They pollute good air. I would be in favor of establishing a state for them. If not, then sterilize them so they can't breed more," end quote. Male, aged 46 to 55 with a master's degree. Curiously, when I read this report, and my father also commented on it on another program, he stated, "I think all of these persons might be descendants of a man named Hitler." I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it. Hitler made use of eugenics, and this is what he believed about the unfathomables, the unthinkables, the Jews, and everyone else that didn't fit his particular Darwinian conception of a greater German society. And he put it to use, even though many evolutionists have seen that the imagery of Darwin has been tarnished because their idol has been, these things that he himself spoke of have been reflected upon him. I mean, when you look at The Descent of Man, you read that book, you see that Darwin was arguing in favor of eradication of certain portions of the masses. And if this were not true, then why did Thomas Huxley, the Huxley family, one of them being called Darwin's bulldog, a compatriot of Darwin, argued for eugenicism? And this goes through all the way down the Huxleys to Margaret Sanger, Planned Parenthood. And yet you have persons, apologists for Darwinism, for evolutionism, stating that those are very Victorian ideas. That's how they tried to justify it. Those are very Victorian ideas in those days. Really? The eradication of human beings just because they are of a certain skin color, because they're lame or sickly or can't help themselves? Very Victorian in my view, wouldn't you say? Wouldn't you say, old chap? Curious. These statements caused Yancey to look deeper at the pool of respondents, individuals who were chosen from unnamed groups that are collectively opposed to sentiments held by many conservative Christians. We quickly saw some of the unnecessary vitriol and fears within many of our respondents. We also saw the social status of those who exhibited this hatred, and many of them would be in positions that allowed them to at least subtly act on their anger and fears, Yancey said. Can I provide an example here? Hollywood. I would dare say that many of these people participate in the elitist circle that is Hollywood. How many feature films, how many productions do we have to see on television, on the big screen, to let us know that there is a concentration of these folks in Hollywood? The Christian morality is always that which is being undermined through Hollywood. Christians are always portrayed as crazies in many Hollywood films. Christians are at fault for most of the world's problems. Christians are the problems. Christians, Christians, Christians. It's a mantra that does not end. I would dare say that many of these people are in Hollywood. You know, I made mention of the Super Bowl earlier in this program. There was one thing that brought much contentment to my heart, aside from seeing the Seahawks lose. There were a few commercials that focused on fatherhood. And they placed a spotlight on good dads. I'm not going to propagandize or commercialize the companies that produced commercials in this manner, but I think you can find them on YouTube, for example. And I informed my wife and my family, we were all watching it. I said, this is good. This is real good. But then I proceeded to state, if this is what sells, if this is what we need in our society, we need more of this, why is it that Hollywood continues to be the great corrupter? How does that tie into what we are mentioning in this particular podcast episode? Exactly that. Notice that this study says that the majority of these people whom espouse Christianophobia are in places of influence, are or participate in certain circles where they can propagate their hatred through different mediums. That's exactly the point. It's a small group, but they lend themselves, or rather turn themselves over to disseminating, broadcasting this idea that Christians are solely responsible for all of the ills in the world, Christianity itself. And they would have us adopt the perception, erroneous as it may be, that we need to do everything we can to expurgate Christianity from our midst, when it's the only thing that has kept us until now. As a matter of fact, we're seeing the dire effects from abandoning Christianity, from forsaking it. Very, very curious. Yancey continues, that motivated us to take a more systematic look at Christianophobia and speculate on how this phenomenon influences certain social aspects in the United States. He said that there are important distinctions to be made when analyzing the demographics of those who have Christianophobia and who, as a result, see believers as being backward, childlike, and barriers to progress, telling the Christian Post that while there are more people who are hostile towards atheists than Christians, those who oppose the latter group tend to be highly educated. I have established that those with animosity towards conservative Christians tend to have more per capita social power than those with animosity towards other religiously based groups, Yancey wrote in a blog post last year. They are more likely to be white, educated, and wealthy. The education advantage creates a unique dimension in this group, as one may contend that highly educated individuals are unlikely to engage in an unreasonable level of hatred and anger. In the end, he said that those who oppose atheism don't have the level of per capita power of those who do not like Christians. But the implication in this, and I have to disagree with him on this, is that stating that if Christians that supposedly are hostile towards atheists had these positions or enjoyed these positions of power, they would be acting the same way towards atheists. Well, they wouldn't be Christians, because Jesus tells us, part of the Christian ethic informs us, that we should love our enemies. That's all I have to say about that. Considering that atheist activists have argued that they are discriminated against due to their secularism and passports. Come on, really? Really? Seriously? It's the same argument that militant homosexuals employ. We're being discriminated against. Can you hold the same job that I can? Absolutely. Can you vote? Yes. Can you use the same restrooms that I use? Absolutely. How are you being discriminated against? As a matter of fact, you're redefining the very term. Discrimination doesn't mean to have contempt of someone. And even if they did, what's it to you? Why would you want to associate with that person or force that person to associate themselves with you? That makes no sense. And yet they call us Christians crazy. And look at what these people are advocating for. To force people to associate with them that don't want to associate with them. Really? Seriously? And we're the nut jobs. At least we live by that famous creed, live and let live. Not these people. No, you're going to associate me and you're going to accept me one way or another because I'm going to use the blunt instrument of the law against you if you don't. What? No wonder you have no friends. Seriously? Seriously. Anyways, and this is what the atheists claim that showcases that there's hostility. Look at this. Past polls have shown, for instance, that citizens are much less likely to vote for them in elections. Well, guess what? Because people don't want moralless individuals in office. They want to believe, and I say believe because many of our politicians play the game very well, that supposedly they are great Christians when in fact they do everything that violates Christian conscience. They want at least to believe that politicians will be guided by some sort of morality, that they will have some ethical comportment whilst in office. He continues, so is a group worse off if more people do not like them or if those who do not like them have a lot of social power but there are fewer of them? Context matters to answer such a question, Yancey told the Christian Post. If you want to get elected to political office, then atheists are at a disadvantage since more people do not like them. I don't think it's that people, I think that's probably, the more I consider it, probably the proper terminology here. Many of them believe that many of these atheists are extremely hostile and just unfriendly, especially the militants. Not everyone. I do know atheists that are actually very friendly and they just disagree as it pertains to these, what they would call religious matters. But most of the atheists that I've met are very, very vitriolic. They're not very nice people to be around. Well, could it be because there's a lack of morality there? Because that's what atheism promotes? Probably. So a group is off. So he continues saying that, but he says, if you want to get elected to political office, then atheists are at a disadvantage because more people do not like them. But if you want to get to a higher education, then you will run into a lot more people with power who hate Christians than who hate atheists. Well, that's absolutely true. We've been quoting story through story here of Christians who are, the hostilities against them are unfounded. Absolutely unfounded. He ends by stating, we documented that some level of Christianophobia is present among certain powerful subcultures in our society, he continued. This helps us to understand some actions in our society. But what's going to come of it? Nothing. Because we Christians are the faction of turning the other cheek, whilst other persons, other groups, militant as they are, they're about enforcing compliance. And this is what we have to take a look at and see the war that we are engaged in, ladies and gentlemen. Unfortunately, the clock on the wall is telling me that we have to end this program. I'm sorry to have to finish it so abruptly, especially with the content as good as it is, due to the fact that this reveals to us what is going on in our society and culture. But nevertheless, please visit us if you're in the vicinity for our Wednesday night youth meetings. We'd meet at 8 p.m. and we are located at 3175 Southwest 25th Street in Miami, Florida. Visit our website for more information, lwym.org, lwym.org. If you have any questions or comments that you'd like to direct to my person so that I can answer those questions and I tackle those issues on this program, do so by writing me an email, geo@lwym.org, geo@lwym.org, and that's J-I-O, not G-E-O or J-E-O. No, it's geo@lwym.org. Until the next occasion that we meet, may the Lord shine his face upon you. Godspeed.
You've just experienced and become privy to information broadcast and powered by LWIM. Choose what to do with the material as you wish, but a fair warning is in order. Consider conserving it with your life if need be, as said information has been known to preserve the lives of its keepers. Join us every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. for more truth in a world full of uncertainty. 3175 Southwest 25th Street in Miami, Florida. If you have any questions or comments you'd like our hosts to address on our broadcast, write to us at info@lwym.org. Transmission end in 3, 2, 1.